Hello and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Today we have a Hall of Fame mom with us. That's right, I am so honored to have with us Gladys Bettis, mom of Pittsburgh Steelers living legend and NFL Hall of Fame running back, Mr. Jerome the Bus Bettis. Straight out of Detroit to South Bend, Indiana, where he went to Notre Dame, to LA Rams, Pittsburgh Steelers, and now he's forever cemented in the Hall of Fame in Canton. The journey of Jerome Bettis is truly an awesome one. We have so much to get to. And by the way, I talked with Mama Gladys in January on the same day Georgia was flipped to a blue state, and we were both elated. So let's get to it. Mama Gladys, it's so good to have you on Raising a Pro. Thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me because I did raise a pro.
Oh, you raised a Hall of Fame a pro.
Okay. I raised a good one.
This will air during Black History Month, which is awesome. This morning, we're all waking up to, you know, the Georgia race, and we have Reverend Warnock, who's going to be the very first Black senator ever going to the Senate from Georgia. And, you know, the Democrats were able to flip that seat. You know, much we don't get into politics, but politics have become part of humanity now. And just waking up and realizing that we will have people in the Senate working on our behalf, working on not just for Democrats or Republicans, but working for the best interests of America. So we're excited today.
Yeah.
And we're celebrating Stacey Abrams. Rightfully so.
I love Stacey Abrams. God, I want to meet her. She's fantastic, fantastic lady. Jerome lives in Georgia.
Oh, wow.
That's his state. So I'm happy for them. I'm happy.
I'm so ecstatic because I think what I love most about Stacey is that the governor race was literally stolen from her. Instead of her taking that pain personally, she really propelled
it. She took it and
turned it into a revolution that really has opened the doors, not just for Black voters, but for American voices, because Black voters are American voices. So I'm so encouraged this morning. You got to help me. I'm so hyped. But when it comes to women and Black women who have really helped shape the American landscape, I come to you when it comes to football because, you know, you've been there. You know, you've done it. And we're going to talk a lot about, you know, Jerome's journey. But I really want to piggyback right now because you and your husband raised your children in Detroit at a time when things was hard economically and racially. So just looking at what this past year has brought, how has it made you feel? What direction do you feel America is heading? And how do you feel about that?
I think it's going in the right direction. These young people today are different than the last 20 years or the last 40 years, young people. They're speaking up. They're making a difference. This Black Lives Matter was just incredible. We've always known that. We're Black. We've always known that. But these young people have put it out here. So if you didn't know, you know now. You know, and they've made such a difference. And I think they're going to take us in the right direction. I think we're going places.
Exactly. I think Black, like you said, Black lives have always been, but it hasn't always really mattered. And I think we've spent centuries and decades trying not to hurt white people's feelings in pursuit for our basic humanity. You know what I mean?
You said it. You know what? And I'm one of those people. I'm a very kind. I'm not necessarily soft-spoken, but I don't want to hurt your feelings.
I have no problem hurting your feelings if you're trying to hurt my life. You know what I mean?
Right. See? I'm trying to do it in a little different way. I go about it, but today, I want to speak up now. I'm ready to talk.
You want to speak up. And we have you. And we have you here. So let's go back to Detroit. You have three children.
I have one daughter. She's the oldest. Then my son, my middle child is my son. And Jerome is the youngest.
Jerome is baby bus.
That's baby. That's what I've always called him my baby. And when he was in college and I hadn't heard from him, I'd call his dorm, and when they answered the phone, I said, "Is baby there?" and they say, "Your baby, hold on." And they get Jerome.
Let's get to that, because Jerome started playing football in high school. He didn't start in middle school or youth. Yes. And I remember one time in our conversation, there was something that you said that stuck to me. Because when it comes to sports, and especially football, it's such a masculine sport that people think that in order for these young men to be successful, they pretty much have to detach themselves from their mothers, which is crazy and insane to me. Because when Jerome started playing football, he was diagnosed also with asthma. So I remember you said that. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you used to wait outside of his practice just in case.
I sure did. I was, you know, back then, my other two had left, were in college, and it was just Jerome and I at home. And he wanted to play football. And remember, Jerome bowled as a child, all three of my children. I taught them how to bowl. I took them to the bowling alleys. We were there three nights a week. We bowled. They bowled in leagues on Saturday. We traveled to do it. They were great bowlers. So that was to keep them off the street and to teach them how to work with other people. It was a lot of things going through my head then, trying to keep my kids together, keep them out of trouble. So bowling was our passion. And then when he got to be 13, 14, and he was a big old boy. My brother, who was a coach at one of the high schools, came over to visit one day. And he saw Jerome out front playing. And they were playing football, throwing the football, tag, and what have you, racing each other. And he saw Jerome, and Jerome was younger. He's 4 years younger than my older son. But he was larger, more agile, faster, everything. And my brother said, wait a minute. And he stood there in the doorway and he just kind of watched. And he said, you know what? Jerome has talent. I'm thinking, really? He said, yeah, he has talent. You need to let him play football. You know, he said, let him come over to my school, let him play football, and he can get a scholarship. Now, we had already started thinking of scholarship, but we were thinking about academic because he's a very bright, smart young man. So we're thinking academic. And he's like, oh, he can get a football scholarship. So I'm thinking, you know, okay, maybe. So I took him to his pediatrician to get a physical. And when we got there, the doctor said, this young man has asthma and he's wheezing right now. And I'm like, no, that's not possible. And he says, yes, yes, it is. Now, Jerome was born with asthma, but it went dormant when he was about a year and a half. About 18 months, it went dormant. So we never saw it again. So I figured it's just gone. But it came back when he started going through puberty. And I told the doctor, I said, well, he wants to play football. I said, but he has to take oxygen. Show you what I knew about the game. I said, he has to take oxygen. And the doctor said, well, if he has to take oxygen, then he doesn't need to play. But if he can use, he had inhalers. He said he can play with these inhalers. And he gave him an inhaler to put in before he started taking some puffs. And I guess a different one if he have a problem. So we had to learn how to use this. So I said, I lost the boat. My husband, Jerome, John, they all said, yeah. And I'm like, no, but I lost it. So he started practicing and he went to one school for a half a semester, and he ended up coming back to school near our home. And I'm like, how can this be? This boy has asthma. How is he going to play? So I would go to the practice, and I sit outside around the field, his high school. I would sit in my car, and I would watch the practices and make sure everything was going good. And one day, Jerome came to the car, and he told me, he says, Mom, the coach wants you to come in. He said, he thinks you're a spy sitting here watching us, watching our practice, and watching the plays.
Stealing signals.
And he doesn't know who you are. And he said, you should come into the field. And I'm like, oh, okay. So from then on, I would go right, park my car right up near theirs and go inside in the field and sit on the bleachers. And I was there every day watching practice and everything. And then I started going to the games, and it's like I'm sitting there with my inhaler in my hand, waiting to pounce out there to use it, you know, or I give it to the coach. But I was always there, always. I said, where else would I be? This boy may have an asthma attack or something may happen. But God bless, he actually had one serious one later on. But we got through it, and I stayed there with those inhalers. And then by the time he got to college, he had the doctors there at college, and they took care of him. And so
you didn't have to pull up in college.
No.
You didn't have to pull up and park.
I let them have it, you know. But I would call, and the coaches would make sure that they would call, and he would talk to me and find out, make sure he was okay.
He did well in high school, and after graduating high school, his recruiting process, let's talk about, I think I read that Michigan wanted him to play linebacker.
Yes, they did. And he wanted to play running back. They pursued Jerome. We went to Michigan for the visit, and we went to Notre Dame for the visit. And Michigan did. They wanted linebacker, and then they wanted a red shirt. If he fullback, they red shirt. And Jerome said no. And Notre Dame and Lou Holtz came to our home, and Shim Beckler did not. And those things matter to these young men. They really do. And when Lou Holtz came to the home, he told Jerome what he could and could do. And I remember Jerome asking him if he could spat his shoes. And for those who don't know, that's tape. He put tape around his shoes and his ankles and things. And they didn't do that at Notre Dame. Jerome was smart enough to ask Lou Holtz this in our home in front of his dad and myself. And Lou Holtz put him on the spot, and he said, yes, son, you can do that. And that meant a lot to Jerome. And on the day when recruiting day, when the day you signing day, Jerome came in the auditorium. He had asked his dad the night before to get him two hats. He had a Notre Dame hat and a Michigan hat. And we didn't know. We had no idea. Well, we had an idea because we only had two schools.
And you knew he wasn't going to play linebacker.
No. We knew that. And when he walked into the gym in his school, he had a Notre Dame hat on. So everyone knew right then where he was going.
And so he went to Notre Dame. And tell us about that experience in South Bend, because there's really nothing to do in South Bend.
Nothing. Nothing.
From Detroit to South Bend. How was that transition, though?
Oh, it was a culture shock for him, he said. You know, and we've always lived in a Black neighborhood. You know, he went to school, and there were a handful of whites there. But basically, he's from a Black area, he said. And he said, Mom, when I went there, it was just all white. I mean, everything changed. The Blackness, I guess, came from the football team. And in the dorms there, they mixed them. They didn't put them in just a dorm with football players. His roommate was in the band, you know, that type of thing. They put them all over. So he learned so much being with the different people. He loved it. He got, you know, how you meet new people. And, you know, and Jerome is a really sweet, kind person. And they became friends.
Were you ever concerned, though, about the racial element and him being one of the few and him being in a situation, whether it's being pulled over by police or just being away from home and being in that very, very white environment? Or is it sometimes football, they just shield you because you're an asset to the team and to the school and to the economics of the school?
Yeah, I think that's about right, because we didn't really worry about him at all. Not like today. I'd be in a knot today.
Wow.
Thank God I don't have any children. I've got, Jerome has a son who's 13, you know, so that's my worry. But he's such a good guy. But I didn't have the worries that we have now.
Really? So you would be more worried today than you were back then?
Yes.
Why?
Yes, I would. Because we didn't have all of the shootings, the Black police, the shootings we have now. We didn't have all of that back then. You know, it wasn't guns. The guys, you'd see them, if they're fighting, they're out there and they're fist fighting. And sometimes someone would say, oh, he had a knife or something. But it was so different back then when the kids were raised.
Is it because we didn't have social media back then where you couldn't see it? And then now we do have everything and we have, you can see it all.
That's true, because things would happen in our neighborhood. And John, my older son, he tried to be a rapper, and I don't say
he said he tried to be.
And I better take that back, because when you see this, he's gonna be, you didn't. But he was a rapper. He had an actual video that came out. He had a, well, it was a cassette tape back then, but he had a tape. And
oh, yes.
He called it the Murder Lab. That was our basement where they recorded all this, everything. And I didn't understand rap, and rap was just coming out back then. And I'd hear him and I'd hear these lyrics. And I said, John, what are you, to explain this to me.
He's in the murder lab, Mama. He's in the murder lab.
He's in the murder lab in the basement, you know. And I'm like, well, what is this about? What are you talking? He says, well, you're rapping about the life you live and what's around you and so on and so forth. I says, well, wait a minute. I'm looking about, you're talking about killing. You don't know anything about that, John. I said, you don't know anything about anyone getting shot or you're right here at home in my cocoon. You know, he said, Mom, it's happening 2 or 3 blocks away from us. I'm like, oh, no. He said, yeah, it's out there. You just don't know it. You don't see it happening around us, but it's there. You know, and that's back to your point. Social media brought it forth. And so it is. You're right. It's so more prevalent.
Yeah.
I didn't see it then.
It is. Because I grew up in Newark, New Jersey in the 80s. And, you know, when the crack epidemic really started to take over, it changed the whole landscape of family and communities. And there were definitely a lot of killing.
Yes.
There was always police brutality, but we didn't have cell phone cameras to be able to capture it. So it's just that now it seems like there's more, but I think it's just that we have a way to capture and videotape, the brutality of it all. So, but it's interesting that, you know, you didn't have the same anxiety that you would today.
I didn't have the same worry. No.
It's a different world. Now, I mean, anyone, Black sons and Black daughters, but being the parents of Black children, you always have that. You know, you always be like, okay, where are you? You know what I mean? Come, you know, I'm not trying to bet check you or whatever. I just want to make sure you're safe.
Right. I do. Exactly. Exactly. You know, my thought when they were younger, I'm such a talker, and I talked to my children, and I would preach to them, and I would think when they're grown, I hope they remember some of the good things that I taught them. We were big components of right and wrong, and I'm thinking and praying that they'll do the right things. Let's hope they remember those. And I don't know, I got lucky; my prayers were answered. I got 3 great kids.
But so Jerome went to Notre Dame. He did his thing there. And then it was time to turn pro. I know you would have liked him to graduate, but 1993, he wanted to enter the NFL draft. What was that process like for you guys just when Jerome was like, okay, Mom, I'm ready to take my talents to the league?
Well, you know, we had that conversation came up, and I told him, I said, son, I wish you would stay. You know, you just have a year left and get your degree. And he said, well, Mom, I've thought about it. He said, and now is my time. He said, I could stay here and I could get hit one time and my career would be over. And I would not have had the chance to go into the NFL and do some things. He said, I want to help you and Dad. I want to be there for you. And this, I have to go into the NFL. He said, so. But I promise you that I'll come back and get my degree. And I told him, I take that promise, but promise yourself that you'll do that. And he's been just excellent. He went on into the NFL and made a name for himself.
Yes, he did. I mean, you provided him that foundation. So he was drafted by the Los Angeles Rams in 1993. So tell us, what was that rookie year like? Because, I mean, he was phenomenal. Right. At the time, he was the 8th rookie in NFL history to rush for 200 yards in a game. We know that was a long time ago because these guys are like breaking that record now. But it was huge.
Yeah.
They're killing it now.
Oh, they're killing it now. Yes, it was. It was. He had a great rookie. He was a rookie of the year. And it was incredible, you know, to be our first year. And my husband and I, we're the parent who traveled everywhere. We went to every game. And back then at Notre Dame, we went to every game at Notre Dame, and we drove. We drove my daughter, my sister, and John, my son John, the four of us. We were the big four. We went everywhere. And my daughter lived in New York, so she would fly in sometimes, or she would come home so she could jump in the van with us and take a road trip. And so it would be five of us, but most of the time it was just the four of us when we did. But when he got into the NFL and he got to Los Angeles, we flew every weekend. We had to fly somewhere, mainly on the West Coast. And my husband stopped working on Fridays and Mondays. He didn't take a normal vacation. They would let him take off Fridays and Mondays. And we would leave on Friday, have the weekend, and come back on the red eye Monday morning. And I was working at a computer school doing financial aid. And one day they came in and said, the school is closing by the end of the week. I'm like, excuse me? I mean, that's just how it happened. So now I'm out of a job, but I can't go and find another job because I didn't work weekends and I wasn't going to another job so they could tell me that I had to work and that I would miss going to see my son play. So I retired then. I never got another job. And by then, you know, Jerome was playing in the NFL, so I just was able to go to every game.
But people don't really understand how important it is for our sons that we're there.
Yes.
You know, it's extremely important, and I can't understate that.
Yeah, I can't either. And I used to speak on that a lot. Support your children. That used to be my cry. Support, and they would do their best. And it's like when we were there, whenever Jerome had a game and he would walk into the field, he always knew where our seats were, basically, because he would always get our tickets. But when he walk in there, you go back and watch some of his films, and you'll see him. If we wasn't in his stadium, you'd see him. As soon as he walk in, his head starts to spinning because his brother is there and his brother has on, if we're not at home, his brother has on a white jersey and he looked like Jerome and he's standing up and he's always waving and Jerome is going to find us. He's going to find us and give us a pump on his chest to let us know that he sees us. And let me tell you, this boy did his thing. He did his best.
He did his thing.
He did his thing because we're there watching him. You know, and he wanted you to see. Let me show you what I can do, Mama, Daddy. You know, let me perform for you. So I tell these parents, get there and see them. Watch your children, no matter what they want.
It's so important. It is so important. Even in high school or in college, yes. Even if they're playing, they're not playing, they need to see you there.
They need to see you.
But, you know, many people, when we think of Jerome the Bus Bettis, we think of the Steelers. But
right.
He was drafted originally by the L.A. Rams. And so what happened between, like, his first couple of seasons at L.A. Rams, so now being traded to Steelers? How did that happen?
I think what happened, they changed coaches for one thing. I find things out later. But when it was going down, I think Jerome found out his worth.
Mm. Can you say that again? Jerome found out his worth.
I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but that's the way I feel, and that's the way I saw it. He found out his worth, and he went to them and told them. And this is after his first year, going into his second year, and he showed them what he was worth. And I guess they just didn't see it, but he knew, and he went to them and asked for a different contract, and they didn't want to give it to him. Now, that's coming from Mama Bus. That's not coming from Jerome or the Rams. They may have seen it a different way, but that's coming from me.
We're going to go with Mama Bus.
I'm going right. So this last year there, like I said, they changed coaches and everything changed for Jerome. It's like they blackballed him. They stopped running him. You know, one game he had eight carries.
Wow.
You know, and he can't do anything like that. He's been rookie of the year. This boy has did so much for this team for 2 years, and now all of a sudden he got eight carries and he can't do anything. He just is out of it. And like I said, we went to every game, and when we walked in, it didn't matter where we parked or where we were, we came in with our colors flying. If it was Rams, we had Rams from head to toe.
You were rammed out.
Let me tell you, when they started messing with him, I had a purple sweater that I would wear to every game.
Can you tell it?
I never put a Rams anything. I put a purple sweater on. But that same purple sweater, I never wore another Rams anything from that day to
this. Wow. You're like, you're not going to mess with my son, and I support this BS.
Not going to mess with my son. That's right. And I support. So they traded him. And the best thing they could have ever did was traded him to the Pittsburgh. He had Pittsburgh, I think he said, and another team. But he went on to Pittsburgh. And it was the best thing that could have happened to him.
Oh, the best.
And when he was at Notre Dame, he was called the bus. Here comes the bus. Here comes the bus. And we had not heard that term because when he went to Rams, he was the battering ram. So Jerome when he went to Notre Dame, he went in electrical. My husband was an electrician, was the chief of the electrical for the city of Detroit. So Jerome wanted to follow dad and be electrical. And I told Jerome, I said, that's going to be tough for you because you're doing electrical, and plus you have I learned a lot about a student athlete. You know, that's a different person. That's two different things you have to do.
Two major jobs.
Two major.
And you're getting paid for none.
That's another whole story. But what happened, Jerome went to there for electrical, but he ended up changing. And I told him, don't hesitate to make the change while you're there. And he didn't. He changed to marketing. Best thing he could have done, he went in marketing. And when you see all of the bus paraphernalia, the bus, everything, that's Jerome did all of that. Him and his business partner who he went to high school with, Jamal Dopes. Jamal and Jerome were inseparable in high school, and they are still together this day as his business manager. And when Jerome went to Notre Dame, he called Jamal. Jamal was at Tuskegee. And when Jamal graduated, he was at Morton Salt for 1 year. And Jerome went to Pittsburgh and he called and he said, I need you here with me. Something is about to happen here and I need someone that I can trust to be here with me to take care. And Jamal left his job and came and start working for Jerome in 96 as his business manager. And they've been together. And he's still Jerome's business manager. And they did all the marketing themselves, the bus everywhere, the clothes. We even had a bus for a while. Everything was because of Jerome and Jamal, that marketing degree that they both had.
It was everything. But you know what? Along with marketing, because you can't market trash. And Jerome produced on the field because he eclipsed. I mean, he got 1,000 yards for six seasons with the Steelers,
which
I know the kids are doing it now. But back in the day, boys and girls, people weren't just rushing for 1,000 yards nilly willy like that. And so he was a power runner and he did well, got in the Pro Bowl, and Pittsburgh was just his speed.
Yes, it was.
What advice, though, did you give him from college to even the pros and when it comes to about women?
You know, that was something else. He's a good-looking guy. I say that.
He gets it from his mama. He gets it flexed on them.
He's a good-looking guy, and the women were always there. The women were around. But you know what? And I guess I can't take all the credit, but maybe that came from his dad, because his dad was straight lace. We called him Honest John. He was just, I was the trouble.
Listen, excuse me, Mama Bettis, Mama Gladys, if you can call your man Honest John.
That's my man.
The heavens has blessed you. Because ain't too many Honest John, Jerome, Tyrone,
yes,
Bill out here.
That's my husband. My husband's name. My husband's name was Honest John. If there was any trouble in my house, it was me. He didn't curse. He didn't drink. He didn't go out. I did all of that. You know, I curse. I drink a little. I went out. I love dancing. So I would go dance. My husband was at home with his kids. And that's what he did. He'd come home from work.
I'm going to find me a man named Honest John.
out of town. He worked two jobs. I'm not kidding. And he came home every day and he showed these men, these young men, how to be a man, how to be a father, you know, how to take care of your family, how to be a man there. You know, he wasn't out there in the streets and nothing like that. So I don't know if the guy picked up on this, but Jerome had the women would come to visit him. And I said, well, you know, Jerome, do you give these women anything? He said, oh, no, Mom, I don't give them anything. I'm not like that. They want to be in my company. So, okay, that's fine.
They want to sit at the feet of the swag, Mama.
Jerome started showering me with just diamonds. I've got, you know, it's, and I'm not a bragger, but you name it, I have it. And I mean that seriously. And when he got married, she has everything. He showers her. And I'm still here. I mean, I'm not lacking at all. And I'm so happy for him. And I'm proud of him. And he did not get married until he was out of the NFL. He said, Mom, I don't want to carry a family with me. I don't want to have my family and kids going from state to state, wherever I am, traveling. He said, I'm not doing it. He said, my life is football. It's like I'm married to football right now. And Jerome retired in February of 06. He got married in July of 06. He had a daughter who was 1 year old, and they got married, him and his wife, his baby's mother, and they've been together 15 years coming up because Jada will be 16 years old this month, their daughter.
You talked about when he retired. He has success. What, 10, 11 seasons?
Yeah, 10 with the Steelers and 10
with the Steelers. Because the Steelers all about, we don't remember them Rams people. Purple sweater.
No, we don't.
And it's amazing that this business, when they don't want you, then they start to set you up in their mind for failure.
Oh, yep, they did that.
This is a part of the NFL that people don't want to talk about, but it's true.
It's true.
In the sense of, and they always look at, it's the player's fault, it's the player's fault. But when the coaches, the ownership are done with you, they start doing some real shady shit.
Shady, you're right. You are so right on that. You need my, you know, I hate my husband has passed on because he would be with you on that about them damn Rams. He hated them. He, you know, it was terrible, terrible the way they tried to tell the other teams that Jerome was a troublemaker and that Jerome had baggage and he wasn't a team player. All of that was a lie and we knew it. And His coach from Notre Dame, Coach Moore, bless his heart, spoke up for Jerome and said that he was none of those things. We were always told Jerome was a coach's dream. He did everything he was supposed to do, everything he was asked to do.
And what always bothered me, because, you know, I've been through it with my son where, you know, when people feel like they're done with you, then they try to destroy you, whether it's your reputation and the whole nine, and you can't go fighting all those battles. You just take it to God in prayer, and you focus on what you need to do to make yourself better overall. But I think this is a part of the league that we don't want to really talk about because it's so easy to demonize a player.
Yes.
But there's so much that's fed to the media.
Right.
There's so much leaked stuff that's happened. We know we just saw Dwayne Haskins go through it where, okay, he struggled on the field, but it was like there was onslaught of like, let's make you the worst person in the world,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I always say if information is leaked, ask yourself, why do I know what they're telling me?
I'm always in his ear and I'm always, and Jerome is a reserved, quieter person, but I'm not. I'm just out there. I see it and I just want to talk. I want to say it. So I told him, I said, Jerome, you're not going to speak out. You're not going to say anything. You're going to let them do this to you. You know, you're not get to an interview and talk about them and say it. And he said, no, Mom, it's okay, Mom. I got this. I said, okay. When it was over with, Jerome had a article in the paper, huge article. He had it in his head what he wanted to do, and he told it all. At the end, when he left the Rams, he told the whole story. He put it in an article, and I felt so good for him. I said, he's vindicated. And that's what he had planned to do. He got a reporter who listened to his whole story. And that's how he got it out there.
And it's like, if it's over between us, let's go our separate ways. Why do you have to go and demonize me? But the fact that he knew his worth,
He knew his worth.
He knew his worth and he demanded what he was worth. Like, who are you? Then all of a sudden they said, you know what? We're going to take your worth away from you. We're going to give you less care.
Yes. And that's what they did. You know, but I hate it because that was his profession. That was his job. It was nothing I could do. No, nothing I could say. Just let him handle this. And he did.
Exactly. So he went to the Steelers, did his thing, won a Super Bowl. Tell me about that Super Bowl win.
Woo! That was the best. You know, we had been following behind Jerome for years. I remember sitting out in San Francisco and it was the big four. My husband, myself, my sister, and my son. And it looked like it was four people sitting in the stands. It was pouring down rain and we had our ponchos on and we were all snuggled. And you couldn't, if you move, the rain would come down and find a little spot in between and you get wet. So we were all hunched together. And when the game was over, Jerome said, Mom, he said, I saw y'all sitting there. He said, why were y'all there? Why didn't y'all get up and leave? And we told him, son, you were there. You were out there on the field. If it was 3 degrees below zero, we're going to be out there with you. Whatever you endured, that's the support I'm talking about. Whatever you endured, we endured.
We endure. And you know what? Let's go back to early 2005, before they won that Super Bowl. I read that Jerome had thought about retiring.
Yes.
He thought about retiring, and then he was persuaded to go one more season.
Yep, that was it. We didn't know whether he was going to retire. He never made that decision, but we knew he was getting close to it. You know, we had talked about it, and he's like, you know, I don't know, I made my body's getting running down and I want to be at my peak. I don't want to be out here like this, he said. So, you know, I'm thinking about coming out. But I think when the team got so close to getting that championship and when he realized they were going to be in Detroit playing the Super Bowl where he was born and raised.
Oh, my God. Full circle.
Right. I think that made a difference with him also. You know, he said, I think I'm going to stay here and make this. And then Ben Roethlisberger, who will always be very close to Jerome, said to him, you stay here, Jerome. If you stay here, I promise you a championship. And those were his words. If you just stay one more year, I promise you. And doggone it if he didn't do it.
How cute is Mike Tomlin, though? We all love Mike Tomlin.
Everything you can imagine about he is it.
Good child.
Yes. That child. That was him. Because I know we would be sitting there, and if he was around, we were like, oh. I mean, it's like it's one of those, like, don't look at him. Don't look up. Oh, don't look at him. Oh, he's gorgeous.
It's so funny because when Eli was at Ohio State, we had pro day, right? And Mike Tomlin was one of the coaches that showed up, and Dawn and all the other moms. Like, we all were just looking like,
wow.
Wow, look at this man. Look at this man.
Yes, look at this man. Yes, you are so right. I remember they were honoring Jerome after they had won the Super Bowl and he had got his Hall of Fame. And they gave him his Hall of Fame ring at one of the games in Pittsburgh. And they put cheers, I think it was like 7 cheers for the family out on the field. So we all went out in the middle of the field and we just were sitting in the seats, me and my sister. And here come Mike Tomlin, and we didn't know he was coming. And oh my God, he just came up to each one of our cheers and grabbed my hand, you know, and shook my hand. And I looked up, I'm like, oh Lord, I felt like I was 18 looking up at just to get close, you know. My sister and I just kind of looked at each other like, oh my goodness, because he's something special. I just, And I'm old enough to be his mama because him and Jerome the same age.
God bless Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
God bless. It's got hot in here.
And he wasn't even there. And he wasn't even there when Jerome played. He was never Jerome's coach. He came the year after. He came when Jerome left.
So he got to experience the Super Bowl, which was great. And then the decision came to retire. Were you ready for him to retire at that point?
Yes. Yes, I was. I watched him, and all the way through his career, I watched him with the asthma. And I knew when Jerome had a problem, the way he ran. And it was always, to me, it was always, and I want to say sad, but I don't know, Jerome would probably be okay with it, to watch him take this ball all the way down and get to the 5 or 10 yard line and have to come out the game. Because he can't breathe. He's got to have some air. And someone else would take that in and make that touchdown. And I think Jerome was such a team player. He was okay with just getting the damn ball down there and being able to, you know. But I always thought, oh, wow. And I'd see him on the side, and he would be down on his knee. And whatever is you see him with his head up, with his head, he's trying to open his lungs to breathe, to breathe. And I watched that 13 years. So when it was time to retire, I'm thinking, yes, yes, Lord, he did his thing. You know, let's help him out of here. And he's doing well. He told me, he said, Mom, I want to be able to play with my child. I want to be able to get on the floor. He's real playful, real playful. He said, I want to be able to get on the floor and wrestle with my child. He said, and I can't do it if I stay here, continue and get beat down like this. I want to be able to walk out. And he did.
So before we get to, which I think is the highest level of the NFL, is to go to the Hall of Fame. Before we get to that, when did Honest John pass and how did that really impact you and your family?
06, Jerome, we won the Super Bowl, and my husband and I sit back and I look at some of those films sometimes, and I remember seeing us on camera, and we were both, I was just crying, and he was sitting there holding me, and it was just the best thing that happened to our family. And, you know, we had a suite there. I think it was about 25, 30 people inside, and then Jerome had so many other tickets. He had hundreds of tickets that he had to buy because it was at home. And these people had been there when he started. So it was just incredible for us. So that ride took us everywhere. When we won the Super Bowl, we went to New York. That night, they flew us to New York to do a morning show. We did the morning show in New York. Then we went to Disney because Hines Ward said, I'm going to Disney and I'm taking the bus with me.
Okay, yes.
And everyone knows the bus, wherever the bus went, his parents went. So they sent the jet to Pontiac, and my husband, they told us to be there. My husband and I packed a little bit. We went to Pontiac. We got on the private plane. We flew to Disney. We stayed there, did the Disney parade. Then we came back and went to Pittsburgh, did the parade in Pittsburgh after all the different shows. Incredible. Good Morning America was here. We did Good Morning America. I mean, it was like that. So then Jerome started working for Sunday Night Football, the one they have now. He started working for that. And that took us to Italy. They said, they want to make the announcement at the Olympic, and they wanted Jerome to come to Italy with his parents. They gave us tickets, put us on a plane, and sent us to Italy. That was incredible. My husband, he went through that. Now, we came back, settled down, and Jerome planned this wedding. We had a big wedding in Jamaica. He had 175 people. It was beautiful. And that was in July. Come November, we got through Thanksgiving, and the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, my husband had a massive heart attack and passed. We went to the gym, my husband and I. He had just retired, had been retired 1 year. He just didn't look good to me, walking around after he retired and not doing anything. And I'm going to the gym 2 to 3 times a week. So I told him, I said, you know what? come on with me. I'm gonna get you a trainer, and we're gonna build you back up because you're just not doing anything. And we did. I had a trainer and for him, and he must have worked with Billy maybe about 6 months or so. And the day he passed, he said to me, "You're going to the gym today?" And I said, "You know what? I don't think so. I feel like I've got a cold or something." And this was on Tuesday, and I didn't have a cold previous, but for some reason, I didn't go with him to the gym. I said, "No, I'll see you when you get back." That's the last words that we spoke. And that just crushed us as a family. That tore us down, because, you know, because he was everything to us, you know, everything to the kids. And when he passed, I think we just got a little closer as a family, and we just bonded, and that took a minute.
How have you been?
I'm good. You know what? I had a bout with breast cancer. That brought us back together right there. That happened in 14 before Jerome got into the Hall of Fame. He talks about me. He talks about the strength that I had when I went through that. I showed them where they got their strength from. And I didn't realize, I think, that I had that. You know, it was just me doing my thing. And when I was told that I had it, when the doctor called me, and after I had all my tests and everything, and she called me, and I said, the first thing I did, I called my sister. I was home alone, and I told her what the diagnosis was. I said, "But I'm not gonna tell the kids. I'm not going to call her." She said, "Oh, yes, you are." I said, "Jeannie, I can't do that. I can't tell them." She said, yes, you can tell them. You have to tell them. They need to know so they can be here with you." I picked up the phone and I called each one of them individual. And man, it was just the best feeling.
To know you don't have to go through that alone.
And, you know, when my husband passed, that's another thing. I said, "These kids, I don't know how they're going to make it through this." But that's when I found out I didn't have kids. I had adults.
And you raised them well. And you and Honest John raised them well.
We raised them well. And they showed me that then. So I guess I needed to talk to them. I was supposed to. And I did. And let me tell you, it took a weight off. We decided we're going to do whatever it is. We're going to get past this. Let's do what we need to do. I fought it and I beat it, and I'm blessed, you know, but I can't leave God out of this. You know, he pushed me and showed me everything to do, and I'm here, and I'm here to talk about it.
And you're a champ. I definitely appreciate always your insight, your humor, your strength. You're not just a survivor, but you thrive.
I am thriving. You know, I am. And those things, everything you say, I didn't know them about myself. I do now.
Now, you have raised a Hall of Famer. You have raised another son who's a great businessman and great father, and a daughter who's doing her thing. So, and not just Jerome, but if you could have one wish for your kids going forward, if you had one prayer for each of your kids going forward, what would it be?
I want them to be happy. I'm a happy person. You know, I'm very sweet and kind. I'm generous. I'm loving. All of those things. Each one of my children have those traits, if not all of them, enough for me to see them. And through all of that, to me, comes happiness.
Okay, final question. Jerome, the Bus Bettis, has had many highs, many accomplishments, Super Bowl, Hall of Fame. But as his mother, what can you pinpoint as one of your most proud moments of him?
When he did his Hall of Fame speech, the accumulation of all of the years of everything that he went through and all the people he met along the way that helped him, he acknowledged all of those people. And he let you know he didn't get there by himself.
Wow, and what a conversation with Mama Gladys. And if you can, check out Jerome Bettis' Hall of Fame speech. It was really awesome and such a great lesson in gratitude. So if you get a moment, check it out.
One of my favorite moments of our conversation is the joy that flowed out of Mama Gladys when Mike Tomlin's name is called. You know, Mike Tomlin is the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Every time his name is mentioned, the joy that flowed out of her was definitely infectious. Ooh-wee!
Ooh, yes!
Hearing about how she lost her husband, Honest John, was a little heartbreaking. I can't imagine what it feels like to love an amazing man all your life and then for him to be gone. But I was so encouraged that Mama Gladys is still living a life that's full of love and that's full of laughter. I love how she expressed how proud she is of this generation and their ability to speak out on issues of racial inequality. Which brings me to today's Annie's Clapback. Living your life trying to avoid hurting people's feelings is the best way to live an inauthentic life. When it comes to injustice, the truth is the best weapon. In a world of misinformation and fake news, the truth is now more imperative than ever. Listen, guys, we got to call a thing a thing. So shout out to this generation, Generation X, the millennials, all of us who stand proudly, who stand strongly in calling out what is wrong in hopes that we can all move forward with the good. And on that note, I want to honestly, in my whole truth, say thank you all for listening. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Broom Originals Network. And if you're feeling this podcast, please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Your support is so appreciated and needed. See you next time, family.